On this week's show, discussing boomeranging with Brett Settles from Penta Engineering Corporation. In this week's news, a week of rest, BIM reality, now tech, and more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, back with my boy Nathan Wood in the land of crazy storms and crazy weather and craziness. We actually had to pause from starting because my boy has to get some work done, don't you?
We had some mold, which anyone who's dealt with rain in the middle of not opportune times of construction leads to some flooding. So learned that the hard way, but we're working our way through it. Seems like it doesn't matter how much planning you do, construction always comes at the worst time. So yeah, I think definitely it's a record month of June of rain for Denver at least, and could not have come at a worse time.
Yeah, I was going to call you yesterday.
We have a permit, finally. It only took us a year.
well, you know, hey, permits.
That's another story.
If you were listening in a while back, you could have used upcodes and maybe got there faster, right? With
right?
the Copilot. That would have been great. And y'all might recognize the man that's joining us this morning, but he is boomeranged around and wearing a new hat today. Brett Settles. What is happening, Brett?
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's great to be back. And, you know, boomeranging definitely is a good topic to bring up here because I've worked for a long time and a lot of the time has been spent where I'm sitting right now. And a lot of my experience comes from here. So happy to share everything with you guys. And I think the most exciting thing for me is that the last time I was here, it was very hard to get our name out. We're a very niche engineering construction company. And I had to leave to introduce myself to the world, and hopefully people will still follow us, even though we're not your typical type company.
Hey, well, we're going to get into more of what Brett's all about. Y'all remember him from maybe that little company he went to for a little while. I'm sure we'll dive into that and a few other things. But before we do, we got to pause for the cause.
Whenever you're talking about something as substantial as suicide awareness and as alarming as to statistics around construction being the second highest rates of suicide in industry, we'd be fooling ourselves if we thought that this was a one-player fix, meaning that it just takes one silver bullet or one easy button to solve this challenge. This is a multi-threaded challenge, if you will, and it's really something that is the responsibility of all of us to lean in, to raise awareness, to provide tools and resources, to up-level conversations we have around, you know, I mean, in construction, we're pretty much, hey, what's my job require me to get it done at any cost? Well, we now see what the outcome of that is. So I think it's important that we partner together to really have a unified voice around why mental health awareness is important, why it matters, and how we can frankly do better as an industry. It takes each of us leaning in to really create that.
All right. Remember, we're back on YouTube. Check us out at youtube.com/@TheConTech Crew. Hey, and we were checking in this morning and looking at some reviews, and none of you have gone out and given the show a review recently. Go ahead and do that. And remember, you want to give us the big 5 stars because, well, you know, that's what we're all about here. Go out there, give us a review, leave us a review, drop us a line, tell us what you're up to, and we look forward to hearing more from you. At the ConTech Crew, we focus on technology that solves industry problems, and we've always believed in our sponsors, so much so that I went to work for one of them. So today, I want to talk to you about Join. Every construction project is a unique prototype, and it's actually shaped by thousands of decisions that impact the owner's business case, design, and the budget. Today, the communication driving these decisions is disjointed across all the stakeholders. Work happens in email, Excel, estimating, resulting in delays, waiting for decisions, waiting for access to information, and sometimes that information is outdated and incomplete. Managing the expectations of the team and keeping the project moving forward is a constant challenge, and a lot of times drives skepticism amongst the contributors. Join empowers general contractors to build with confidence and maximize the potential of every project by connecting these owners through new workflows that fit into your existing processes. We bring design teams and trade partners into a single platform. There's transparency and collaboration in the decision making, which builds trust and sets projects up for success. You might be asking yourself, do you need another tool? Well, let me tell you, Join fits in seamlessly with your processes and your other tools. In fact, we're here to help those other tools. Regardless of your estimating system or your project management process, Join will be a valuable added resource without disrupting those other systems and your teams. Check out Join, the collaborative project delivery platform for the built environment. Learn more at join.build. All right, we're back. Brett Settles, Chief Technology Officer, Penta Engineering Corporation.
Yeah.
Now, this is where you got your career started, isn't it?
I would say for all the important reasons, yes. There were some precursors to this job that I had to do first in order to get the first job that I had here. And I could wrap those up pretty quick. I thought I was going to be a sheet metal drafter because I had really high ambitions as a teenager. And essentially, I got into GIS and GPS in college, collection, stuff like that, which led me to civil engineering, which led me to learning all that software, which led me to an Autodesk reseller, which led me to learn all the AEC software, which then equipped me for my first stint here at the company that I'm sitting at now. Now, first time I was at this company, it was the part of the timeline that you all remember where it's like, hey, we're making drawings and we're printing paper and everything's all good. And it's 2004 and BIM came out of somewhere, right? And my first stint here was taking the company from a flat 2D environment to a modernized 3D sort of production environment. And that went on from drones and scans and models and coordination to about 2017, where things started to plateau on the design side of technology. Construction tech was raising up. I jumped ship to join a company to try to help construction tech get where I thought it needed to be. Spent about 6 years doing that, and then came back as a CTO of the company that I spent a lot of time at. Technically, this is my seventh year here.
Seventh year, huh?
Yeah.
So boomeranging around, you did some time in tech, then did time in contracting and with an engineering company, and now back, and then back into software and back. What are some of the lessons from early on that you took when you left Penta and went to Revisto?
A lot of it is just the nature of the two businesses is so extremely different. An example, Penta is a very old company. It's 37 years old this year, started in the early 80s, and it is very much cement, lime, aggregate processing, material handling plants, different things like that. It is a very, or it used to be a very old school natured company, right? A very defined pyramid of management, a very defined process of delivering drawings, a very defined process of coming up with specifications. This is how you do this. This is how you do that. Going to Revisto, it was like, hey, welcome. How are you going to help us out here? Right?
Blank slate.
And
yeah.
and I really enjoyed that. That is not an offense to that company. That's just the state of where everything was, right? You were at the beginning stages of an emerging software. The year was 2017. I had been in software my entire life. I mean, I remember using 3D Architect as a 14-year-old, right? So here I am, 32 years old, trying to figure out how to solve communication in my company. I get a demo for a software I've never heard of. And I'm like, okay, this thing isn't ready, but it can be. And that is what really led me to jumping and taking that job over there and spending that time and helping them and their team grow as much as I could while I was over there.
Yeah. What were some of the problems you were trying to solve? I mean, a lot of us know, you know, what was going on around then in the world, and contact was just taken off. So what were some of the problems?
Think about it this way. We went into a situation where we were having drawings. Now, drawings can be laid out on a table. They can be viewed as a PDF. They can even have Mylars created. You can shine light through them. They're very easy, very versatile. Some of the biggest problems that I had was not getting the team to create the information, like using Revit, Civil 3D, any of that. It was the disconnection of the management teams to the technology because they could no longer access it. So one of the biggest problems that we had as we were going on is this in 2017, I had a very happy workforce and a very disgruntled management team because they had no idea what was going on because they couldn't figure out how to be a part of it. So when I saw Revisto, I immediately saw a situation where I'm like, easy to use, non-destructive, built-in communication. These are the types of things I'm looking for. Context related. Couple examples of, and I'll be real quick. I'm in a conference room. I've got a scan. I've got drawings. I've got models. I've got pictures. Do I want to bring all that together in a way that makes sense? Or do I want to show it on four different screens? Or do I want to flip through each one individually and try to make humans think about how it all fits together? Or do I want a system that can show it all together in the way that it was always meant to be put together? Right? So context and explaining that context was always a problem. But then the other problem was always more of a traditional one. Hey, I fixed this. How do I communicate it? Well, I'm going to make a phone call. Or I'm going to make an email. All right, well, then phone call gets forgotten. Voicemail gets lost. Email gets forgotten. Well, who was supposed to do that? And all of that leads to inefficiency. Right? Like the ability to communicate your intent, the ability to act on that intent or to move the ball to someone who can act on that intent is pretty much the only reasons we miss deadlines. I'm really simplifying this though, but does that make sense so far?
No. I want to go down this rabbit hole of like communication versus like comprehension, right? Like, cause I think what you're getting at and maybe what to take a step back, because what I was hearing in your story is that at some point along the way, you went from a user of the software to a developer of the software and kind of trying to understand how these different users would use it and developing in a way that is, you know, which is again, what design thinking and what all the progressive software, you know, should be doing. But I guess, yeah, like help me understand, like, did you actively decide to make that shift? Like, was it a gradual thing? Did it just like one day you're like, I'm going to develop software? Cause like to me, as I've used it, but like, I could never imagine being in the world of developing it. That seems way too complex for me, but it seems like you made that pretty easy.
Yeah. So let me define this because there are people that are listening to me for two different reasons. One, cause they want to hear me talk, and two, they want to hear what I'm going to say. So, I was an industry knowledge bank, is what I was. I can only code Python. Barely. Right? Like barely. Enough to make Dynamo go, this guy actually knows something. What I did, though, was I sat down with the teams that would develop the software. And I would in detail explain what makes the life of someone like myself very bad, right? Like if you take a look at clash detection, and this is just the easiest of the pickings, right? There are many things like this. I'm getting paid an amount of money, which is a lot, right? For this. When I'm doing clash detection, what am I doing? I'm doing 25% thinking, 75% button pushing, and I'm also doing it in a linear way. Right? So I think, push a button. Think, push a button. Put a window around things, push a button. Push more buttons. Right? Like every time you push one of those buttons and there wasn't a thought before that, it's a waste of time and energy. Clash detection should have always been criteria based, not click based. But when you're making money hand over fist for 20, 30 years in a row, what's the point of changing it, right? It's like going into an electrical subcontractor with shag carpet and golden chandeliers and saying, hey, you need to up your technology game. And them going, we make $1.2 billion a year. Why would we do that?
So damn with them.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I think in order for technology to need to take place, someone somewhere needs to feel pain. And in the situation of those development, I felt the pain heavily. My job was to do Q&A on models on top of civil engineering, every project that we did here. And the idea of Q&A-ing models drove me nuts because I knew that there was no thought being put into it. It was just me doing things. And those things made me miserable and were really a waste of time for the company.
Yeah, now that hits on why you jump to try to solve the larger problem. I wonder when you jump from though, because you know, an engineering company, what you guys do at Penta is a little bit different than sort of some of the other problems you came across. But it was your job to be the conduit, right? Like that's the uniqueness of construction technology that we need, because in a lot of other spaces, especially when you're building for, you know, a consumer, you experience the problem, like you know it. But when you're B2B, when you're building for construction companies, it's a different process, especially too that we're, you know, engineering, you know, and what you guys build is very different. Like we were talking pre-show, it's not hospitals. That's not, when you jumped over, that's not what you knew. So I'm interested in that transition and how it opened your mind up to some of the other problems and you continued to help solve that.
Yeah. So I'm going to start in my favorite place. One advantage to a company like ours is Penta Engineering Corporation is a consulting arm, an engineering arm, and a construction arm. We have all three, right? Now we have different capacities for those three. Consulting can take on pretty much anything you throw at them. The engineering company can take on $500 million to $1.5 billion projects potentially. But the construction team really has the capacity of probably close to 150, 200 mil tops. Like tippy tops, right? But the one thing that this did for me was it gave me, especially on certain projects, an intense view of the efficiencies that design build can bring to the industry. I could literally go to the engineers and say, I need you to do this. And they go, well, we don't want to do that. And I'm like, I don't care because it's going to save us 3,000 hours over here. And there was no contract in place to prevent me from doing such things. I jump over to the construction world, can't do that. It doesn't work that way. So there is a huge advantage to working inside of all-inclusive turnkey EPC, and that technology workflows can happen at the drop of a hat because you have control over every aspect of how a project gets built. That was a huge change for me, understanding that I couldn't ask the designers to just do clash detection before you give me the construction drawings. Why the hell am I doing it? You know what I'm saying? You guys laugh, but like, this is where I come from.
No, I love that description. Cause again, I haven't lived, spent some time observing that world of EPC, but I've always said that, like, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Like, yeah, you can tell them to do anything, but you also can tell them to do it wrong. Cause there's a lot of ways to do these complex projects wrong. And when you do hold all the keys, it's high risk and high reward on yourself, right?
Yeah, think about it this way. When you're on an EPC job, you could be driving the fanciest Benz in the world. But, you know, if you fly off a cliff, I don't know how much it matters what you're driving, right? You know, so yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest jars for me was these time gates, these efficiency gates that happen when you have people that have different scopes, different responsibilities, and different desired outcomes than just, we need to get this owner a project. That was a huge change for me, and also changed the way that I, in my mind, had wanted to see the software developed.
So I have an interesting kind of industry question, because I've always wondered, you know, between we talk about healthcare or higher ed, some of these, you know, more progressive AEC industries versus the EPC. And it doesn't have to be necessarily Penta. It could be, you know, any sort of industrial or what you're seeing in the energy space or transportation. But like, I feel like AEC is probably naturally further ahead in the technology adoption, but has more against them to achieve that kind of final state of controlling their own destiny. Whereas, as you just described, EPC can control their destiny more, but it seems like they're further behind. Like, what's your assessment?
Yeah, that's a love that question. Okay. You're right. You have less control in that standard construction environment. Totally true. You have way less resources in our environment, right? So it's a balance, right? I'll give you a great example. When I was working with some of the hospital builders, it was like, well, what AC unit goes on the ceiling? Well, the York AC unit. Where do I get it? You download it there. Oh, where's the insertion point? It's on the back left side. Click it, click it, click it. Next thing you know, we have reflected ceiling plans with five different York specified AC units just sitting right there, like it was like easy peasy, right? We get vibrating shakers in step files, right? So we work with our vendors. We have to come in. We have to create. We have to model our own RFAs or figure out how to ways to create RFAs or ITMs based on the fabrication data that the vendors are giving us, right? There are no tools that manage projects the way that we do, right? Like, we're going through a Procore implementation right now. PIC, which is our construction arm, they're probably over there having a pizza party right now. Oh no. The engineering company's scared shitless. You know what I'm saying? Because we've got to make it work for them because we're in the CPC environment. But if I go out and I buy something for them and buy something for them, then we're just two companies working under the same roof.
Yep.
You know, and my goal is not to, when I started here in 2010, even though the people sat next to each other, we were literally issuing structural drawings from the structural department to the mechanical department.
So acting as one company, or acting as two different companies.
Yeah,
exactly. Now, that went away while I was here last time. We got rid of that last time. But now we're in the situation where we know how to create, we know how to document, but we don't know how to manage ourselves as we turn what we create into actual project information and deliverables.
Because that's an iterative process, right? You have to learn through doing and failing and getting better. But that's scary for people, right? That have only
and none of it was here
it
when
way.
I left. That's the other thing. We've created all this stuff since I left, right? Like,
wow.
Procore, Revisto, OpenSpace, the things that really nail down these parts of the space, they didn't even exist. Or if they did, they were in very early seed, sort of like seed stages or just very early on, and they did not function at the level that they function at now either.
So you made the shift back then, right? So you went over, built software, came back. What are you, and they built all this. Now, what are you excited about putting together? You know, what's the next frontier?
I'll send you guys a slide deck. I got just names and things going all over the place. First of all, our BIM manager's job is not even going to be the same thing anymore. Completely different. Totally different. 100%. Right now, he's doing model QA and clash detection on over 30 to 35 projects, basically just churning them in, churning them out. What do we not have? We don't have great templates. We don't have great libraries. We are going to use Revisto to automate what he's doing now. And for everyone listening, I'm not even screwing around with the second button. right to the third button, peoples. Full automation right there. He's going to turn around and become our LMS manager, managing how our team is educated. He's going to work with our new content managers, which are going to work at turning vendor information into RFA, usable RFA families. And he's going to work on bringing together the project teams on communication. So just by, that's just the middle piece of software, right? I feel like we're gaining $150,000 to $200,000 a year. And that's without me actually calculating ROI.
What do you mean by that? How are you getting that? Yeah, without actually calculating some sort of ROI, because everybody loves a good ROI.
Because some people in the room may laugh at this, but this is how I get to a real quick conclusion. I know Tom's salary, and I know what he does all day. That goes in the bucket. I also know how many hours he's billing to the projects, and how much time is going into that. That goes in the bucket. Those two things alone equal to about that amount, let alone anything else that we gain in terms of like efficiencies and stuff like that. So I could probably find more than that if I really wanted to, but I'm kind of like, well, if I don't have to, I'm not going to try.
Yeah. I mean, it's enough. It's enough right there that you have it. And now it's on to, so, you know, it's implementing, and automating a lot of that manual process. So freeing them up to do more. Nathan, looks like you got a question.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised in the world of EPC, you mentioned RFA, which I think is a Revit family, right? And so is Revit here to stay even in the industrial world, or are some of like Tekla and some of the other products right there? And yeah, what's your stance on that?
We are dry bulk handling, not liquid.
Okay.
And that's what makes Revit a lot easier for us.
Because you're not horizontal necessarily. You are in one location.
Our flow sheets are not like intelligently connected, right? Because rocks are falling off of a conveyor into a bin. It's not like a nozzle feeding a tank. If that makes sense.
Okay.
Well, it makes sense to Nathan maybe, but it makes zero sense to me. So I have no idea what the heck.
Well, that was just my backhanded way.
Why that would make
a
damn bit of difference.
I was making sure we were explaining all the acronyms, you know, Revit families, and I think ITM is a mechanical BIM standard.
So Jeff, think about it this way. I'll try to be very quickly because it's a world I live in. An ITM is an external database that connects to 2D blocks as well as 3D blocks that gives it metadata as to what it is. So in stuff like CAD MEP, a ball valve would have an associated ITM data field that says this manufacturer, this size, this, that, right? And RFA is just a Revit family with all of that baked in.
Okay.
So.
All right. And now explain why Revit works with rocks falling, but not liquid, because they still lost me there.
Yeah, yes. So when I first started this job, I immediately thought Plant 3D was going to be our solution. I go Plant 3D, industrial projects. And what I found is that while we could make Plant 3D work, it did not produce drawings in the building format that we wanted. And it was definitely more of an analytical liquid process software. Things like I'm making toothpaste. I'm making acid slurries. You know what I'm saying? We are crushing rocks with steel balls, putting them on conveyor belts and turning them into cement. Ours is much more like a conveyor process than it is an actual like FDA food process.
Gotcha. And so Revit fits better for the workflow.
Yes, it allows us to create things better. A lot of our processes are housed with regular structural steel, corrugated metal siding. We use regular steel to hold up the conveyors that we put in. Mm-hmm. We build buildings that are machines.
Which is far different than what a lot of the other industrials are doing.
Yes.
Yeah. So along that EPC to AEC spectrum, you're very close to the middle, similar to like data centers are like on the, you know, just right of center on the AEC side.
You could argue,
and you could argue you're just left of center on the EPC side.
Yeah, I mean, if this was the line of EPC, like, yeah, boy, it sometimes it feels like one, sometimes it feels like the other.
That's kind of cool, though, to see, like, so you had that experience of Plant 3D and Revit, and you basically had to kind of unsettle yourself and pick a new one. Now, fast all the way forward, and now you're kind of in charge of it all, right? And you're looking at it all. How are you taking those lessons learned and kind of applying it to, you probably have some assumptions coming out of industry already, right? You've been ingratiated on the road around all of these other solutions that exist.
Yeah.
How are you going to manage that? Continuing to allow yourself to not be sold on something that doesn't work, but now you're in charge.
I'm more eager to get it right and less eager to please than I was when I was younger. We're going through this Procore implementation right now. And I have people that come up to me and they're like, what about this? What about this? What about? And I'm like, hell, whoa, we'll get there. Don't worry about it. Right?
We'll get
As to where if I was 22, I would be like, hold on, let me figure it out. you know, I think that plays a big role in it. I think that knowing, you know, my first time around, it was I need to do the research to understand what works. At this point, unless the technology is brand new, I know what works. I know what doesn't work, right? It's a lot of these technologies that our company needs are somewhat old. And considering that our company is somewhat plateaued, we haven't gone backwards. Right. We didn't lose anything. But whenever I left to come here, there was definitely a plateauing in tech. And I've kind of come back in and picking right back up where I left off, plus or minus a few things. But this time it's about what do we need to be successful over the course of the next 3 to 5 years, not next month. No matter what I do right now, next month is next month.
Nathan, you gotta love this. This is the aging of the Brett.
Well, and I mean, I can only imagine what it's like to go back to that company that you left as that like BIM VDC role, to come back into that CTO role. And, you know, I'm sure there, different folks that, knew you back when may or may not understand the difference, but like, does it feel different? Do you, obviously you act different. Are you treated different? How is it different having that title just alone?
It's different and the same, and I'll explain it. I had people that I worked really close with, people that I consider mentors, people that I hear that I consider to be very important to me personally and professionally. They still treat me the same.
Good.
like it doesn't matter what my title is. Tom's going to be like, Brett, I want you to, you know, it's just, I could be the freaking president of the universe and he's going to tell me exactly what he wants to tell me. And that's great. I love it.
Even in the C-suite, you're still the technology officer. I mean, let's be realistic.
I'm an enabler. I'm not a manager, right?
You're not the guy who fixes it. You're the guy in charge of fixing it. And that's a big difference, right?
Yeah, I don't manage anybody.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I help the company make decisions around technology that are going to help us make more money. That's really my ultimate goal. And it's funny that if you listen to my dissecting popular IT nerds podcast, I think Mike Kelly thought that it was going to be a big talk about tech, and we ended up talking about empathy for like a half an hour. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. You've got to understand that if you're asking your users to change, there's a stress level associated with that. And then there's a decline in productivity, which adds more stress. And then there's worry, and then there's anxiousness, and things start to spin out of control. Next thing you know, everyone's like, it's like, these are things that the human condition is important to take into consideration when you're making large changes. And so I've tried to really have those conversations. I mean, I've had more talks with our lowest level employee than I have with my boss.
All right,
and that's fine.
I have to ask this one now, because I was thinking about this, like the motivations for someone to change is either a pain in the current state that they want to get away from or an opportunity in the future state that they want to chase, right?
Yeah.
And so when it comes to getting these folks to change or adopt technology, whatever, like what have you found has either worked better or what do you kind of default towards between current pain and avoiding that versus future opportunity and ROI?
So it's absolutely changed. The first time around, it was a competitive, it's always a competitive nature in business, right? I mean, it always is. But the first time around, it was, we need to change for productivity reasons, right? You got to remember, it's 2010. And the sale behind Revit is not that Revit is a database that can enable all these other business aspects of your construction company. The sale was ultimately, we can draw elevations and sections faster. It's a more efficient drafting tool. So those were the sorts of things that you play on to get that change. Hey, do you like doing that section at 5:30 when you'd rather be, eating, dinner with your family? No, I'd rather be eating dinner with my family. Use Revit, section done. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was sort of that argument.
Yeah.
Well, that argument is still very similar now in that Procore is what we're implementing for the PIC side. And I've had some people say it's great. I've had some people say you should have chosen something different. But the biggest thing about Procore is that it's easy to understand, it's easy to implement, and it's something that everyone can take to. I put it in the hands of my construction team. They're already sending goofy pictures and talks to each other. And this is a company that has worked on Excel spreadsheets for the last 30 years. ROI on Procore alone is going to be astronomical so far that it's not a question of, is it going to pay for itself? It's a question of what else can we buy with the savings of this?
Because Procore is not cheap.
No, it's not cheap, but you got to think. We do a submittal and a transmittal for every piece of paper that comes in our company and leaves our company. For every single project.
I can tell you millennials don't do that anymore. Or at least I never did.
I would quit before I did that. Yep. I'd be like, nah, this isn't for me. I'll go wait tables. Totally a joke, but these are the things that when I talk about Procore, and this is not just Procore, even though I'm sure they love me saying their name over and over again on this podcast.
It just rolls off the tongue.
It is an efficiency gain in just digitization of project management.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. The other competitors in this space offer the same thing. They do it a little differently. But we are no longer manually tracking submittals and transmittals. We are no longer sending out emails of this drawing is now updated. We are no longer waiting for the subcontractors to tell us this or that. All that goes away. And that's like 60% of construction's job.
Well, that's the fear and the opportunity, right? Is the person in the back of the room goes, oh, wait a minute. You just described 60% of my job and you just said that that's going away. Am I going to lose my job? And then now you got the fear factor that you have to deal with, right?
I've had talks with people, literal talks with people at this company. I'm like, you ain't going nowhere. Like, it's
I got more for you. I got more for you.
Well, it just won't be the same as what it was before.
Yeah, you know, like we've got so much work, you're never leaving. Like,
yeah, it's totally. So you talked about the empathy for those folks that you're taking, it feels like you might be taking 60% of your job and you're like, no, you're not going anywhere and I'm going to keep you forever. What are you keeping them around to do? What does the future look like
that
you're
going to be having them do? Stacking projects. Coming up with different things, right? Like one of the reasons that we don't make as much money as we can is because there's a certain amount of capacity.
Yep.
Right? Like if we have a staff of 200 people and, you know, we can do 30 jobs with those 200 people and we don't plan on hiring more, we need more efficiency or more people to get the jobs done. So my goal is just to take the same staff that we have today and get 3x money. That is literally the goal. I am trying to go from a number to three times that number over the course of 3 to 5 years.
Without really growing your footprint, which is
without growing a whole lot.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Without really, like, yeah. Because when we think about it, and I've noticed this since I first got in the industry, like when you talk to them about scalability, it's almost a foreign concept at a certain level. They understand it in certain spots that the industry does, but you're talking about, you know, truly not hugely growing a footprint, but exponentially growing your capacity to where in that process though, because it's not like you're changing your capacity necessarily in the construction side of putting, you know, steel in or more of that in. Where's the efficiency gain?
The efficiency gain, in my opinion, is going to be all out of the schedule and the mistakes, right? Because with systems like this in place, decisions get made quicker, things get mobilized quicker and at the right time. People are billing less time towards these projects. Because yeah, remember, as an EPC, hourly rates of people are a big driver of the actual cost, right? So it's not just like materials and stuff like that. It's also the engineering rate. So every RFI costs us double.
But how does the person writing the RFI know that? Because Jeff still won't know this quote, but as we always say, tell me how I measure and I'll tell you how I behave. And I think that's what you're getting at is how do you change the way that their value is perceived? That isn't just about, hey, I worked this many hours, I put in my timesheet, I got paid, I went home, and things are gravy. It's like, well, can we change that model in a way that is more where they're actually motivated by the same reasons that you are? That you know, if they write less RFIs, it benefits them directly.
I'm a big proponent of, you know, for on a personal level, like profit sharing, like stuff like that. I think that motivates individuals. But what I find funny about the RFI process that I'm talking is inside of our company, someone will say, well, we only had our 4 RFIs on that job. And I'm like, that's... And they go, well, what do you mean? I go, well, did you only ask the other end of the building 4 questions? No, we're over there like all day. So that's all day worth of RFIs, right? Now, the fact that you can go back and that you can talk to them and you can get an answer quickly is fantastic. But it doesn't mean it's not a request for information. It is. So if you're doing stats based on we only had 4 RFIs, you're fooling yourself.
What technology, you know, what's got Brett like super stoked back in the driver's seat 3-5 years off? What's got you stoked, man?
So the idea of automating clash detection was a great first step. And then joining OpenSpace and understanding what their AI can do is a great first step. I'm waiting for the person to call me to say, how do we make AI do clash detection? I think that's going to be a big part of it over the next decade. The things that got me going right now are the different methods and the different means in which we use reality capture, mainly photogrammetry, scanning, things like that. Yeah. And the other thing is just the industry that I'm in. You know, I love this industry. I don't know why, but big, heavy machinery that spins and crushes stuff is like totally cool.
You know what, man? Like nobody saw this beforehand because like Brett was wandering around the office showing me pictures of the things that they've built. And I know that you have a lot of pride in the things that you did in software, but I don't, not that level of pride.
No, you saw my face when I go, oh, we made Revisto. It's really neat. But when I show you the preheater tower in Kuwait, I'm like, eh? You know, like, so.
And just to hear you, big, huge things that crush stuff. Like, yes. that's the lore of the industry. So as somebody who's now, you know, in charge of bringing people into the industry, how do you articulate that? How do you use some of that to bring the next gen in?
Yeah, you know, I think it really comes down to the fact that construction nowadays is not your father's carry a heavy ass bag around, break your backs, you know, break your knees sort of industry. It is, you know, it is physical, but use tech, use the tools, be inventive, be creative. And this is going to lead to just more interest, right? Like, I feel like robotics and construction are very similar, right? And then the other thing is with like computer and stuff, it's like, what better than to mold something in your image and see it come to life in the physical world? You know, a lot of those projects I showed you, Jeff, at one point they were just a shaded block of crap on my Revit screen.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
I would never give credit to those Aggies down at Texas A&M, but I think they may have coined the term construction science. The construction science. Yeah. I love that term of, yeah, like construction is a science and that it's different from design. Like generative design is a very complex thing. And I think the whole clash automation thing fits into that design automation. A lot of stuff that Brett Young has been chasing and I think we'll probably continue to chase until the cows come home. But I think where you were going there with the reality capture kind of scan to BIM, and it's not necessarily a clash. It's a deformity detection, right? Or like if it didn't conform or non-conformity detection is what it is. I think that's got a lot of legs in like kind of the 3 to 5 as we work our way towards the generative design. But
so like the thing, this is the way I think about it. The way that we automated clash in the software that we did it in, as we said. Okay, a BDC person gets two models. What do? First, they dissect it into the things that matter. Then they compare them together. Then they group those closely related items together. Then they name those items. Then they disperse those. Right? Ultimately, that's it. These are all things that can be, with just enough criteria, can just be boop, 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 boop. A human does not need to do that. The only thing a human needs to do in clash detection is understand the model that they are receiving and what data nodes compromise that model. And if they know that, they can automate all of this.
I may push back on access panels and stuff like that, but, you know, for another podcast.
Yeah, no. Hey, and like I tell everyone internally, if you want to argue with me, I love it.
Oh, that's one of my favorite things to do. I, at the conference over a beer, arguing with Brett Settles is, yeah, one of my favorite pastimes.
I plan on making it back to conferences probably this fall. RCN, I think, is going to be my first one back at it.
Ooh, RCN, a little plug for the RCN. That's a good
one. Yeah, I got a three-part series, boy, and I'm only two deep.
All right. Well, it's time for part three, my friend. It's time for part three.
The unofficial part three.
The unofficial part three. All right. Awesome. Well, look, we could sit with Brett and probably go downhill from here. So I'm going to keep us from going downhill and get us into the news. So before we do, thanks for joining us. Brett, hang on, and you can stay with us through the news of the week.
I'm sure we've talked at least a couple times about the IIJA. I don't know, Jeff, if you remember what it stands for, but the Jobs Act, right? The Infrastructure Jobs Act that passed, and everyone goes, okay, what's actually going to happen with it? So I did see on June 27th, they announced the first round of an $85 million competitive grant program to fund digital construction technologies to save time and money. Sounds kind of like what we were just talking about, guys. Advanced Digital Construction Management System, man, they like acronyms, ADCMS grant program will focus on digital construction, such as computer modeling and 3D design, to encourage state-of-the-art practices in project delivery. So I think it's really interesting here to see that these steps are being taken. They're moving forward. The FHWA is putting out this grant program. Again, some of the goals include more consistent modeling that allows seamless sharing of design and construction plans, The program goals include accelerated adoption of advanced digital construction management systems, say that 10 times fast, more timely, productive information sharing. So again, they're hearing it. I think it is interesting where we always look at government projects as being kind of the last one to the game. But I've always argued that it could actually be the slingshot, that now that all these things are ready, all it takes is that flip of some government dollars to really keep those ROIs churning. What do you think, Brett?
Yeah, absolutely. I missed a little bit of it. I do apologize. I was reading an email.
No, it's fine. So I guess my question is, because again, your projects, I assume, are privately funded projects, not necessarily government funded. So where do you feel like, you know, is our government funded projects going to catch on to this whole BIM wave, especially transportation, or is it mainly going to be private that drives it in the EPC world?
Man, I'll tell you what, from all the projects that I've been involved in, usually it's a drive towards getting the tools where they need to go. So like, even if the government is not about it, there will be like loopholes that people jump through to get that stuff in there. But yeah, I don't know if I'm answering the question directly, but I see people doing whatever they need to do to get it done. And it, you know, we did that a lot where it was like the government demands this, right? Well, okay, well, we can quasi do that by hosting it here and using this. And so,
well, I guess that's the question, right? What's the difference between demand and support? I think that the idea is now it's supposed to be supported through funds. But is it really just going to be a bunch of consultants out there writing a bunch of demands that won't get implemented? That's not going to fix anything, right?
No.
So hopefully they put some smart people on that, private-public partnership that's going to try and solve this.
Yeah, if you're looking for your acronyms, it's the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, IIJA.
Thank you.
It's been an interesting one to watch because they're slowly releasing money towards different parts of the requirements of the act itself to increase the use of technology across the board. Nathan, whether or not it becomes an area for consultants to do something and maybe make demands and not do, we got to hope that it's actually a spot where, you know, as Federal Highway Administrator Shailen Bhatt says, these technologies, along with the funding, will help us more quickly deliver transportation. We have a huge transportation and infrastructure issue in the U.S. And it's actually, you know, we covered this with Fred Mills, and I just re-released that not too long ago, that like infrastructure is one of the things that moved our industry and our country forward.
Absolutely.
And investing in this technology as part of this act is a way to continue to move our country forward. I think it, you know, we get away from our roots sometimes, and this is an opportunity for us to stay with our roots. All right, Nathan, we got a little IIJA. What else you got for us today?
So I forgot last time when I wore my BIM Guru shirt, or not your BIM Guru shirt. I had to give my shout out to Dusty Williams. I was skimming through LinkedIn and saw his post that, Brett, I loved your comment, so I had to read it here. So his question here is, ever wondered why some folks obsess over the next big thing while ignoring the current big thing? And again, his point here around reality capture tools as well, something we just discussed, that many of these tools are too busy forecasting future tech. They overlook the game-changing innovation that's already at their fingertips. And so again, what he's advocating for is focusing more on adoption and implementing what's ready to transform the way we work. And I love your comment here about, you know, planetary digital twins and kind of, you know, that we do need to focus on kind of what's here today. So shout out to Dustin for putting good content out there, not overhyping these things like digital twins. But I guess in your world, is digital twin like a buzzword? Do clients bring it up? Is it used internally?
So I have a very specific view on digital twins. I'll tell you exactly what they are, and I'll be really quick about it. I believe IoT is kind of, IoT sensors are sort of the endpoint of the digital twin digital part, right? You could take a software like Revisto, Navisworks, Plant Viewer, Tekla BIM Site, any of that. And if it's detailed out to fabrication level detail and adhering to those sensors on a real-time basis, at that point, I would feel comfortable calling it a digital twin, but only at that point. Before that, it's some sensors and a model, and they talk to each other. The
feedback loop is what's important. Yeah. And that, exactly. That's like kind of the lowest hanging fruit to achieve that feedback level. I would agree with that.
It's a nuanced on the digital twin side of things. But what I like about what Dustin was talking about is, you know, we are all apt to jump. And I think it's because, like, think about this in your day to day, Brett, you need to think about 3 to 5 years from now. But you said next month's going to be next month. But today's today. Like, most people are not doing enough today to implement the technology that exists. In fact, I think what he's highlighting is we're looking for the disruption, the big change. And it's like, no, we actually need to, in a lot of areas, incrementally adopt and implement the things that are there, because then eventually they create the big change. Like you just said, with an IoT being an endpoint for a digital twin, everything else is just things that aren't connected. But if we don't do each of those things, we can't ever connect them. So cart, yeah. Horse, you know, chicken, egg, I don't know, whichever one you want.
The dilemma.
I don't like big changes personally. I like little changes, because if you do the little change, every time it comes out, there never is a big change management problem. You're just always current.
Oh, but then you could also go to the innovator's dilemma and realize that it actually does happen and you actually need to manage both. So I just gave you some reading to go do on your own. And if any of you have not read The Innovator's Dilemma, thanks to my boy Jake Olson for pointing me to that one.
Well, I'm going to have to read it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, The Innovator's Dilemma. Sitting in the seat you're sitting in, especially doing what you do for Penta, it's a great book to really keep your eyes open, because incremental change is huge to a group like yourselves, but you also have to be looking and watching out for the disruptors that will disrupt yourself. So I would love to continue on that one, but we are going to jump into something that you know quite a lot about, Brett. So this one's a shout out to our friends at OpenSpace. Okay. They launched a BIM product at Waypoint event this year. So the construction photogrammetry leader extends value of reality capture to BIM users and rolls out additional innovations. So this is a For Construction Pros article. Waypoint was their annual user summit in June this year. And so just grabbing a few things that they've done. They have been doing BIM Compare for a while, or rolled out a mobile app feature called BIM Compare, which enables field workers to easily navigate and view their models side by side, which they had. But at Waypoint, they announced OpenSpace BIM Plus, a micro suite of BIM features to extend their OpenSpace capture product to do analysis, coordination, model management tools. You know, I think really extending to what Brett was talking about earlier, just a few other things they announced: an OpenSpace FLIR integration, which if you aren't totally fascinated with FLIR, you need to be. It's thermal imaging and infrared imaging. Way back in the days of the show, we got cat phones with FLIR in them, and I used them everywhere and was appalled at where the cold spots were and the hot spots were, et cetera. So a lot of different things have been released at a rapid pace. So I figured I'd bring that up, because I think Brett knows a little bit about that. Nathan, what did you think of some of the quick releases that our boys at OpenSpace, our folks at OpenSpace are doing?
Deja vu. I hadn't heard FLIR in a long time, but it was the iPhone attachment that had the FLIR thermal on it. I mean, yeah. I guess because you're sort of a reality capture nerd, Brett. Like, what do you feel like is going to be the best balance for construction when it comes to all these different types of reality capture, from like Matterport does to high end Leica scanners to BLK 360. I mean, there's so many options now, right? Like, at least for your type of projects, like what are you recommending for kind of this quick scanning or the FLIR type stuff?
Yeah, it's interesting. So large scale civil, Leica P50, small scale civil, Leica P40, interior industrial design buildings, Faro X330. electrical rooms, BLK 360. I haven't thought about this before, guys.
No, I was like, oh my gosh. I did not put this answer in the notes and you were just railing.
And then for smaller panels, we've actually, we haven't used it yet, but I plan on using Sitescape since we can do it directly from the phone. Photogrammetry, we use OpenSpace, but we use OpenSpace to monitor the site for things that we don't know we're looking for. See what I'm saying? OpenSpace is never meant to find something.
Yeah.
It's always meant to just see what's there at that time. If you want to document something, you can take a picture of it and do a field note with OpenSpace. But we do a lot of walks where the person just walks and then off and walks and then off. And then 2 days later, we're like, oh, there's that old clamp over there that such and such can't find.
And
stuff like that. But we try to do as much 3D imagery as we can based off of what we're trying to capture. Like a Leica P50 is not really efficient for an intersection. A P40 is not good inside. An X330 is too much detail for an electrical panel, and a BLK360 can't get much more than an electrical panel. So that's where all the decisions come from.
So the answer is don't buy it. Go to a service company, it sounds like.
Now,
hey, depending on who you are. Plug for Dustin.
Yeah,
now,
right.
Here's the thing. Me and Dustin are similar people, I think, in a lot of ways. I just never started my own company. I continued working. So if you don't want to understand all this stuff at the level that I do, that's why you call Dustin, because he knows it the way I do, plus 60,000%.
So. Well, and that's for that just a predecessor. We're going to bring Brett over to nerd out on the dorks at some point to go deeper into that.
Jonathan's head's going to be spinning.
Well, I was going to say, because Nathan, you and I can just keep up with understanding the types of scanners that he's talking about. Jonathan's going to be asking you fired questions on each one. So stay tuned for that one.
Yeah.
We got to wrap this up though. So my last one is actually, we're doing two LinkedIn posts today, but this is one coming off. Obviously we record these things earlier these days, so this won't be out for a little while, but I'm just coming off a week of rest. And I noticed as we came off ours that Sasha Reed posted about Procore Technologies Global Wellness Week, where here at Join and there at Procore, we had a week shutdown where basically it's a perk that the company shuts down for a week and allows its people an opportunity where there's not a backup of email going internally because, you know, I took a week off and I'm working with Brett and he didn't take this week off and he's sending me emails. So I get back and I got a whole bunch of stuff from Brett that makes me almost as anxious as all the anxiety before I left. And I thought it was really cool. We're seeing more and more of this out of technology companies. In fact, at Join, we were inspired by HubSpot doing it. So
yeah,
and I think it's a great opportunity. Also, you know, it's a lead-in, but this is going to be post-haste. If you don't know about Get Construction Talking, then you should go out and check out Get Construction Talking. It's a partnership between Procore and the B1M to really focus on mental health and awareness. I think the future, the real opportunity in the future here in construction is to make this industry not only more efficient, but much more palatable from a mental health and wellness perspective. So Nathan, I know you're passionate about all of that. So thoughts?
I love that there's just so many of these different efforts out. I mean, we always go back to Cal Bayer and, you know, starting a lot of these, you know, early on conversations about mental health and wellness and just to see how far the meshing has come and where Sasha and others are picking up the ball. I love it. I love that it has not just, you know, faded off from COVID, it's actually picked up more.
I posted yesterday on, there's I believe he's Irish or English. He's really big into the safety thing. And he had a story about a guy named Kevin on a bridge that I just found intensely touching. And I commented on it and, You know, no one should ever feel that way at work. We're you know, it's too short of a life for us to all be upset all the time. We gotta be happy about this. So.
Yeah, right. I mean, we're building some of the greatest things. We're crushing rocks. We're turning them into concrete. We're doing crazy stuff. Yeah. And we should be proud of it. And we should also be walking with our heads up and make this an industry that everybody else can come to. So with that, I am going to wrap us up for the week. Brett, thank you so much for sitting down in your new role. It's been awesome to watch the career and watch you loop back around. So we're looking forward to hearing more about you in the future.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm always up for coming on and chatting, whether I'm the subject or, you know, you guys have a sick person, you want me to come in and tell stupid jokes. I'll do it all. So just all right. You guys know where to get me.
We do. Nathan Wood. Thank you, brother. It was great to see you, my man. Thanks for having you on.
We'll see you down the mountain later today.
That's right. I'll be down the mountain in a little bit.
See ya.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Brett Settles. To read all of our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.